this finals time, and it's sort of it's funny how things work. I mean, at the start of the year, you know, the narrative around Geelong was sort of, you know, the retirement home down here, and the age of the profile of the list, and you know, struggles during September, and now you're sort of premiership favourites heading into it all. I mean, how do you reflect on sort of your journey through the year and where you sit now? And have you proved people wrong, do you think, already, or do you think you've got another step to go?
I just don't think about it. I think it's a rule for life, not just your footy life, but if you tip into what others want you to think and don't think enough about what you want to think, you're off track already. So, look, even if we go really well, I'm not going to sit back and think about things that others might have said. I just prefer not to hear them at all, which is, I've doubled down on that even more this year, and my life's better, to be frank. So, short of you bringing it up, I wouldn't even be aware of it.
Just on that perspective, has that been a shift from you after maybe, I mean, self-reflection is probably a bit too strong a word, but just, you know, your journey as a coach and as a person, as you sort of get more experience in terms of your attitude towards that stern voice and the pressure and everything that comes with that?
Well, I'd go even a step further. I don't think about it as, I don't put my role as prominently as some others might. I think I'm here to do a job to facilitate our players and our club and our people being the best they can. So whenever the conversation comes back to me, I do my best to ignore it. I just don't think it's that relevant. And it also makes me feel uncomfortable. So if you want to make me feel a bit of discomfort, ask me to talk about myself.
Is that a new perspective, though, do you think, in terms of your role as a coach? Or...
Okay. Take three, let's go again.
Sorry,
okay. No.
Would you have thought that 10 years ago when you started as a coach?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I've always had that philosophy that the coach works for the players. I don't see it as a relationship where I'm the boss and they follow my orders. And we've got a coaching group that extends beyond our football coaches as well. Everyone that helps prepare the players is there for them. For the same reason, I don't think coaches coach against each other. You know, it's just, it's something that I've always felt. And if anything, like to answer your question specifically, the 10, 12 years I've been in it, it's just led me to be even more sure that that's the right philosophy for me.
Nothing's ever perfect in a football sense, but could you have asked really for a better lead into a finals campaign, having the ability to rest players and then bring these key players back? And in terms of the fitness you've got, like,
Well, it gives us a lot of confidence. I think if we sat down and tried to forecast what the perfect preparation would be, we couldn't have come up with much better than this. But it's even hard in retrospect, looking back and saying, this was a better thing than that. Like, you can't control your fixture. I think everything that's been within our control has been handled really well. So without being perfect, we're going feeling like we can play our best footy. And I don't really like reflecting back on the past too much, because I just think every situation is unique. But if I do for a second, this is a better preparation than we've had for a long time.
Obviously, that gives you confidence as well, but does it sort of give you like, there's something around the corner that's going to trip us up, or do you take that view? I mean, you can view it either way.
No, I think it's, again, if you think that... And again, it kind of goes for your life as much as our footy team. If you think that everything's going to be perfect and easy, you're kidding yourself, and you're going to be shocked when you confront the inevitable. So we understand acutely how difficult it is, but again, great things are impossible to do without overcoming some difficult situations. So we feel like we've got a resilience and a confidence in what we do to withstand those difficulties, but that doesn't mean they're not going to come.
No, for a few weeks, the selection squeeze is likely going to be on, so the guys that are unlucky and maybe they get a reprieve through the sub, with the likes of Mark O'Connor and Brandon Puff and even Sam Menegola, just take us through those decisions.
Well, again, I find it hard to rank the best and worst things of coaching, but that's up there in terms of the worst. It's I think there are some cliches that get rolled out, like it's a good problem for the team to have, and you know, there's no such thing as unlucky players. I just completely disagree. with the latter one anyway. It's a brutal part of coaching. The thing that I would emphasise, and this has been our policy all year, this is a decision we've made for this week, and it's for this week alone. You know, the next week or the week after that, we'll treat as a separate situation. So those three guys you mentioned, if you had have asked me 10 weeks ago, I would have said clearly they're in our best team. So I feel desperately for them, but they will support their teammates, do everything they can, and be ready when their chance, or if their chance comes in the next few weeks.
You said you treated it week by week, so take that as it's a matchup thing, or not necessarily?
Oh, they're just a whole heap of circumstances that are unique to each week. So the matchup thing, that's one of them. There's a whole range of things that I could go through that I won't, but I think it is important for us to note that that's our policy. We completely agree that there's another policy that could be equally as effective, which is we pick our team and we just stick with it, but that's just not us.
Anything can happen in the next 30 hours or so, but how confident are you that the 22 you named last night will be the 22 first bounce tonight? Are there any balls in the air still?
No, 100% confident. That's our team.
Do you know who the sub will be? Or you?
Yeah, we know. Yeah. I'll text Fly.
When's the last time you spoke to him?
Oh, it's probably been a while, but I think with all those guys, you kind of I could not see him for 10 years, and you know, within 5 seconds, we'd be back to the way we were 20 years ago. He's a really infectious kind of guy, and I really admire what he's done, along with Justin Lepich as well, at that footy club this year. They should be proud of themselves. Yeah, it doesn't factor one little bit for me. But when you say it's there, it is there for others to see. But it's just, I think more than the fact that we know each other is, you know, the background. So I think culturally, the environment we're trying to create, there'd be a lot of our experience in Brisbane that would influence that. But in terms of on-field stuff, it was so long ago now, I think probably the influence that Lepich and McRae had at Richmond is probably more relevant in the way Collingwood play.
Jeremy Cameron's had an outstanding year. I mean, obviously, you know, he carries that form into the finals, and just in terms of his fitness, and he's obviously ready to go, and just his role in a big finals game, you know, how does that sort of work in terms of finals and finals footy, and how he plays his footy, and how it's built to go on a big stage?
We do have a view that if things aren't quite humming, then you do need to pull a bit of a rabbit out of a hat, and that's where things like a bit of extra effort might be required. That's not us at the moment. It's a really boring answer, but he's going to do a pretty similar thing, or try to do a pretty similar thing to what he did in the last home and away game. It's, you know, we're not hard to scout. You know, the way we play is pretty clear. I think that probably goes for them as well. They've got some confidence in their system, rightly so. I just think it would be a desperate move for us to think that with one of our best players, we've got to do something completely different. Now, he does have some variety in his game as well. Some that's directed by the coaching group, and others that's kind of a bit of an ad lib situation for him on the fly, which again, that's kind of how we coach our best players at least. Oh, it's just so good to be back, isn't it? Like, I've said it a few times publicly. It's great for our people to get to see us, you know, in a big game against good opposition, basically sold out MCG. And it's great for us to get the chance to deliver what we've been working, you know, so hard on for the last 3 years in what almost felt like was happening behind closed doors. So. I think pretty early on it was clear that it was the most finals tickets Geelong members had ever taken up, which I think speaks to their excitement and our excitement for the situation we're in.
You've spoken a lot this year about embracing pressure and fighting through it and taking it on. How much pressure do you think is on this fight?
Well, as I said a few times, like, to do great things, you have to deal with the, you know, the anxiety, the kind of, you know, the anxiousness that comes with, you know, the fear that things might not work out as you'd hoped. But that's a much better way to live your life than not being in the fight at all. So the pressure, I guess we look at it a little bit differently. At least I'll speak for myself. Like, no one can put any more pressure on me than I put on myself. So I just try to focus on me. Like, if I don't deliver, I couldn't really care much less about what anyone else thinks, because I'm dealing with, you know, my disappointment. So how much pressure? Oh, hard to quantify. A lot of the external stuff's a bit overrated probably, but why take away from the theatre of it all? We're here to embrace it. Well, the short answer is yes, but that's only because I just so firmly believe that, you know, everything that you want to achieve in life is about constant improvement and evolution. And I'll be different, we'll be different in 4 weeks' time than we are today. So it's not intentional being a bit more philosophical. In fact, now that you bring it up, it forces me to talk about myself, which I really dislike doing. So this is the last time I'm going to answer those questions. That's not true. Ask whatever you want.
When you met earlier in the year, there was a moment, I think in the third term, where Jack Inman got under the skin of a few players. Are those the sort of moments you need to be aware of? I don't know if you discussed specifically about him and the role that he can play. That might be digging too deep. But are those the moments that you need to be aware of in finals that could possibly change games?
Yeah, so there's two parts to that. There's the agitation that comes when you give away a free kick. So the best way to mitigate that is be really clear on the best way not to give away a free kick. And he challenges the tackler to go low. Everyone in the world who even casually watches footy understands that. But the specific incident you're talking about, we reacted to something that, you know, he did or said. I can't quite remember the circumstance. I think it was involving Selwood. So yeah, you just got to be clear on that in the moment. You want to respond in the right way, not react emotionally. So yeah, but that's not something, hey, finals are coming up, this is something we've got to address. This is stuff we've been working on for years.
They're pretty precocious, the players, and he sort of sums that up. I think he plays up on memory, so I'm sure remembering sort of comments, if there was anything said.
Oh, no, sorry, I may have misspoken there. I'm not across anything that was said. I think... Let me just recall the situation off the top of my head. I think Selwood was run down by Ollie Henry, and then Ginnivan might have got in his face a little bit. So Tom Atkins, and Tom's a bit like this. I kind of like it, to be honest, but again, that fine line between, you know, responding in an aggressive but a manner that's within the rules and then going a bit over the top. But Tom didn't like it. And yeah, if people have a go at Joel Selwood, his teammates aren't going to like it. That's kind of the captain he is. You want to defend him. So we don't want that happening this game. But if it does, you know, we'll address it and do everything we can to make sure it doesn't happen the next game.
Can we just move on?
You can go wherever you like. Wherever you like.
I mean, you obviously watched the footy last night. Incredible.
Yeah, amazing.
Did you make it a Tom Lynch thing? And were you surprised that the goal was overturned?
No. My position on that, with limited information, is to look at it, and I think this is factual. There's an umpire in the arc, and it's an umpiring decision. So I think my understanding is what the AFL's done is to try to give the umpires as much help as they can possibly get. So the umpires are mic'd up, the three of them can talk to each other, they get communication from off ground, they've got the arc there to support them as well. But it's not that different to other decisions where people might look at it and say, well, I disagree with that umpiring call, but kind of the call's the call. It doesn't make much sense to say, well, he got that wrong. So, well, umpires make mistakes all the time. I don't think that was one, but that was my observation.
So, obviously, it's never going to be perfect. If we're pursuing the goal review, I mean, Dylan was sort of the view that it's not good enough to get rid of it, but do you think it's worth pursuing it? And it doesn't need to improve?
Oh, look, I don't have a dog in the fight. Like, I guess in principle, it would be strange not to support the idea that you should give the umpires as much help as possible. But, and at the end of the day, except that it comes back to an umpiring call.
Back on the Magpies, in preparation for this week, there's been a number of times in the past month or so when you look at the stats and you're way behind in a lot of the numbers. You look at the game and it feels like they're behind, but they're still in it. Do you have to factor that into your planning that you might be watching the game and think we're looking all right here, the numbers are good for us, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be winning?
Yeah, I mean, their game against Carlton, if you looked at the numbers before the game, it's a belting. But I think, I don't want to be critical of anyone else, but I think for a period of time, there have been a couple of teams, and I think Richmond fit into this category and Collingwood as well, where the traditionalists would have said, you need to win these stats to win the game. Well, that hasn't been true of those teams. And I think we've never really been a coaching group that looks at it that way anyway. You can be ahead in a lot of the statistical areas, and it gives you a bit of a cue as to the pattern within the game, but it's not to say, you know, if you're winning contest the ball by 20 or 30 that you should be in front on the scoreboard. That isn't the way we'll be thinking about it on Saturday, but I think it's a good point you make, like, especially Collingwood, but at this time of year you're playing the best team, so it just stands to reason that they're not going to turn their toes up. But yeah, we know clearly that even if the game's going okay for us, if nothing else, they've shown a capacity to not give up.
What will you be looking for three quarter time to say we're going all right here or this needs to change? What do you realise?
Just so situational that I can't forecast it. I could give you eight different scenarios, but we've never gone into a game thinking, right, we need it to be exactly this way at half time for the game to be going well. It just depends what's transpired in the game. Do you have something specific in mind? I feel like I'm avoiding the question.
No, well, it's up to whatever you were sort of
10 goals up on the scoreboard would be nice, but
probably the first place to start.
Yeah. No, I understand why it's done, but we just don't look at the stats and say we have to be dominating this part of the game. And I think that's the way we've tried to evolve our game, you know, over a period of years where we can respond to the way the game is being played. It's not as if we're saying, you know, this needs to be a game where we dominate, contest the ball, or, you know, if the game's played, if it's a really high stoppage game, we're okay with that. If it's a really free-flowing game, we're okay with that as well.
You obviously won't divulge out, but have you gone to work on, say, if you are up by four goals at three-quarter time, how you shut down Collingwood's ability to get back into the game and how they take the game on? Is there a way you plotted to shut that down? Is it possible? Can you shut it down?
Yeah, you can, but we've been working on it. I've been working on it for about 12 years. Like, it's just, you know, different teams challenge you in different ways. Collingwood just happened to be really good at that situation, and the best practices in the moment, in real games with, you know, a lot at stake, and they have been playing with a lot at stake for at least the last month, probably longer than that. Yeah, they've had the perfect kind of practice in that moment, and we've worked as hard as we can within our training system to be on the same page and know what we're trying to do in those scenarios. But there's not a club in the comp that wouldn't work on it. And again, because a club doesn't execute it, it would be wrong to say, oh, that must mean they haven't been working on it.
Just last one, you got the legacy badge on, obviously something you're passionate about.
Yeah, look, I'm really passionate about legacy. They support, you know, in the order of 40,000 families in Australia who have been touched by war or by those in the military. It's a cause that's close to my heart. My dad served in the army in Vietnam, and after his death, Legacy supported my family, my mum in particular, really well. So the last 2-3 years or so, Legacy haven't been able to get out due to the COVID situation. So, you know, today's badge day, I just implore anyone, you know, it's $3 for a badge or for a band. We go into Legacy Week next week, and you know, this week's one of the biggest weeks of my life, you know. It kind of feels like, you know, there's nothing else at times, but I think it is instructive to occasionally take a step back and think about things that are more important than this, and more important in the context of my overall life as well. So there's not a whole lot I can do, but if a few people buy a badge and support Legacy, then I'd be really grateful. Oh, I can't win any friends answering this question, can I, Kingy? You go first.
That's okay.
All right, that's good enough for me.